It's the monkey movie between Kong and apes in honor of Monkey Man. Out this weekend, what is your favorite revenge movie?
I'm Katie Rich, and I prefer my revenge movies less bloody and violent and more glamorous, so I'm going with Death Becomes Her.
I'm Matt Patches. I'm going to have to go with Jamie Lee Curtis's finest film, House Arrest. That film where all the parents are mean and they get locked in the basement.
Not House Party, not House Guest.
No, House Arrest. Kevin Pollak and Jamie Lee Curtis and a bunch of other parents get locked. Jennifer Tilly's in that movie. Christopher McDonald. They get locked in the basement. Take that, parents.
This seems like something I should have seen in 1996, and I didn't.
What a great, extremely 1996 movie, by the way. Like, who's greenlighting this? Well, Disney Plus won't even greenlight this movie.
$7 million at the box office.
That's more than six.
I definitely saw it on VHS. That was how long ago this was.
This is one I rented a lot.
Hey, it's me, David the Seven. I'm going to go with Kill Bill Volume 1, but just barely over some other obvious classics I hope my co-hosts have named. They haven't. I was thinking of Old Boy.
When you wrote that down in the doc, that really just gave us permission to put
just be like, house arrest. Like, God damn it. But fine.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Fine, I can hear you now, Dimitri. Clear and plain and coming through fine. I'm coming through fine too, eh? Good. Then, as you say, we're both coming through fine. Good. Well, it's good that you're fine and I'm fine. I agree with you. It's great to be fine.
It's a podcast.
Hello and welcome to Fighting in the War Room. It's episode 469. It is the week of Wednesday, April 3rd. That is the day that in 1882, Jesse James was shot in the back of the head by the coward Robert Ford in his home in St. Joseph, Missouri. I haven't seen that movie since 2007, but I think it was like an accurate recreation of that killing on April 3rd. I don't know.
Probably. I mean, there's documentary truth.
It's the ecstatic truth of Casey Affleck's decision to kill Jesse James. David Ehrlich is not here because his in-laws are staying with him.
He claimed he didn't remember. Yeah, he didn't claim he didn't remember, but certainly I would remember that this was happening if my in-laws were coming to stay in my two-bedroom apartment.
That six people are living in my New York apartment.
I have certainly been known to have... a flexible idea being like, no, I can make all of this work. That's fine. And then, I mean, but I don't have to podcast in my hallway because I live in a New York City apartment. So Godspeed to you, David.
This is what rent is about, right?
His in-laws are not paying their rent, which is part of the problem that he's operating with here. But we're all here. I'm a little alarmed to see that we have seven emails in addition to some reviews. So I'm not even sure how to set up this question.
Do we have time for all this?
No.
I will do this as quickly as we can.
Okay.
And you know what? If I happen across some that are super long, maybe we could save them for next week and therefore we won't have to talk about Marvel Snap. But let's do this. We've got some app reviews. That's where we like them, in the Apple Podcast app. Why? Because their weird algorithm will serve this podcast to people, and more people need to hear us.
Weird algorithm.
Is that an idea? Is that like $1 million idea? Sorry.
Oh, if you could make a song about it, then yes. This first one comes from Kevin NB48, and the subject is Katie Rich Forever, 5 stars. Was always waiting to write a review, but for the right time, and today seemed like the time to do so. In the world of online film criticism that can be so pompous, overly defensive, and gratingly self-righteous, Katie brings a sense of joy and passion that could make it worth wading through all that other muck. I'm so sad to hear about the news of Vanity Fair, but I'm so glad this podcast exists for nothing else but to be able to hear one of my favorite voices on film. Corporations crumble and fade away. Katie Rich is forever.
True.
Yeah, is it? We're gonna talk more about what's happening to Katie Rich. this episode of the podcast.
Oh, Katie's crying.
Oh man.
Oh, wait, are you? I don't know. I just said that for effect.
It would be nice if I was. I don't know. I've been a lot going on the past week.
The text review comes from a person called Listener Jeffrey, and its subject is "It's a podcast." 5 stars. Hey there, love the show. I've been listening for about a year or so now, I guess. My bad on taking so long to do this. Initially found my way here for more Katie content. Been a little Goldie since the very beginning. Would have done better in the Oscar pool if I'd remembered my dang login to change things at the last minute. And devastated to hear the news of your forced departure. Thank God I still have this podcast. Also found my way here shortly after discovering Trial by Content, and happy to have double Dave 7 doses too. I knew Ehrlich from Blank Check, and Patches was mostly new to me, but the show has quickly become one of my favorite hangout pods.
David doesn't have another podcast. He just shows up on one.
No goals, just chat. You're all excellent bus companions. So glad Dave is recovering well. Hope it stays that way with your gnarly open wound. Be well, all. JK, that's my name. Not kidding about everything I said.
Katie.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Are the Little Gold Men listeners referred to as Goldies?
Little Goldies, yeah.
Little Goldies.
Yeah, I believe it was a listener idea to come up with a name. I think we like put out a call for it. We've been doing this show for a very long time, and we've never asked our fans to name themselves. So maybe now's the time. I don't know.
Ooh, that what? I don't know. I would.
The Strange Loves.
what would Fighting of the War Room fans be? Fighties. I don't know. It feels like Fighties. That feels weird. The sex review is from SA16. It is going to the war room for Katie, 5 stars. Hello, Fitware hosts. I have been fans of your work separately for a long time, but I've never listened to this podcast because I felt I already had too many pop culture podcast listens. However, I've been listening to Little Gold Men for almost its entire run and am incensed on Katie's behalf by Vanity Fair's stupid and short-sighted decision to let her go. I don't want to be in a world where I don't get to hear Katie's takes, so I'm here reporting for duty. Oh, hey!
Judgingly listening to this podcast instead.
New listener. Fantastic. That is the best news that has come out of the Katie situation so far, as we got a new Fighting in the War Room.
I did promote this podcast on Little Gold Men for possibly the first time ever, which I feel bad about. I realize... I did promote it on Blank Check, though, as we know.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I don't know.
This is my only podcast, please.
We'll see if... Well, get another podcast. Dave has, like, 6.
Yeah, but now this one has the gold sheen of being the exclusive Katie Rich podcast. You can also email us at fitwr.podcast@gmail.com like these people did here. This first email comes from Sam, and the subject is how to get insurance to pay for your colonoscopy. Hello. I'm a nurse anesthesiologist, CRNA, and frequently do anesthesia for colonoscopies. The number of young people having polyps and colon cancer is alarming. This and a family history made me want a colonoscopy now at 38 versus 45. The gastroenterologist. Thank you, Katie. I was working with told me that rectal bleeding is the key phrase to use to qualify for insurance to pay for a colonoscopy before the recommended age of 45. 40 for African Americans. He scheduled me and I had one. All is well, but with my family history, he recommended I get another in 5 years. This is still before insurance would pay for a screening colonoscopy, so I plan on having, quote, unquote, rectal bleeding again at the age of 43. Mm. Glad that Dave is doing well. Just an aside, I personally feel that Kate Middleton is dealing with a similar situation, either diverticular disease, ulcerative colitis, or Crohn's disease, but unfortunately, they did have to do a colostomy poop bag and did find cancer in the bowel that they resected. I also learned recently that a baseline mammogram is recommended at 35, then yearly starting at 40. Most women I talk to don't realize this. Olivia Munn taught me that having your first child after 30 increases your risk of breast cancer. This led her doctor to order a CT scan, even though she had a negative mammogram, and that is how her cancer was found. Love the pod, Sam. Sam, thank you so much for the medical tips. Wow. Rectal bleeding.
Katie, have you had a mammogram?
No, I have. I was told in January to schedule one after I turn 40 because that is when they've told me to do it. They never told me 35, but I have no family history at all. So maybe that helps.
Well, I've often used rectal bleeding as my excuse to get a free coffee at Starbucks. But now that you say that it's a good way to get a colonoscopy.
I feel like saying you have rectal bleeding will give, they should not give you coffee.
I just walk to the counter and say rectal bleeding and they give me a coffee. Did anyone know about the secret off the menu order? It's like butter beer when you go.
This does kind of confirm my suspicions that people who work in medicine, like, there's just stuff that they understand that they're never going to tell the rest of us that, like, is very simple if it's them. And for the rest, we all just get to wonder about it. He's got all the secrets.
I was rewatching some West Wing during my recovery, and I remember the password when they're talking about whether they should talk about Bartlett has MS as Sagittarius. and rectal bleeding is the Sagittarius of getting a colonoscopy. So I'm glad we are the podcast that brings that information to the people. This next email is from David's anonymous benefactor, is how they want to be credited. And the subject is no Marvel snap talk this week. Dearest David, the reason Kraven the Hunter gets +2 when a card moves to his location, yes, you asked out loud when you were confused, I know you don't remember that though, is because they are entering his home turf and so he gets stronger to fight them. That's fun flavor, don't fuss. Collectively, you all make this podcast a weekly listen and very enjoyable. Thanks for doing it.
I'm completely off Marvel Snap now, so this is both sad.
I was at a child's birthday party on Saturday, and like we should do a whole segment about attending other kids' birthday parties, but I ran into one of the dads who I don't know that well, and he was playing Marvel Snap, and we had a whole conversation about it. It was great.
You're a gamer.
Yeah, now I'm a gamer.
The sext email subject is layoffs and diverticulitis. It could happen to us all. Hi, crew. This is Kevin, a.k.a. The Best Captain K, twice co-host of FitWare's call-in shows. I only ever lurk on the Bird app these days, but of course I still listen to the show every single week. It's a nice break from my mind for an hour. I wanted to reach out after Katie and Day both met a man recently named Tom Foolery. It's another essay for you all, as I tend to do. Dave says I'll read this as fast as possible. Years ago, I was working for a company named Pat Live. It was an answering service where companies like those lowballing dorks who send spam to buy houses for pennies could hire live receptionists to take messages. There were more legitimate companies who use the service, but you get the concept. I moved up to be a supervisor there, doing too much work because it needed to be done. We were getting 100 complaints every day. Honestly, not that bad compared to the amount of calls taken, and other supervisors were doing help desk or building scripts for the agents. The whole place was a mess where uppers unsurprisingly didn't care about the well-being of employees. I was deeply stressed and depressed, eating Miss Freshly's honey buns like Dave drinks Baja Blast. Drank Baja Blast, Kevin. I'm trying to be healthier. That cocktail helped me end up with the little diverticulitis belly buttons in my intestinal lining, which caused the most physical pain I've ever felt in my life. During one flare, sitting down was like volunteering to be Vlad the Impaler's torture puppet. I eventually had a colonoscopy somewhere around the ripe age of 27 or 28. Time is a mystery to me these days, and the doctor threatened to take my colon if it happened again. So far, that hasn't happened yet, and things have weirdly been fine since. But what did happen is that at that job is me eventually being laid off, only to be the only one to be. A lot of people raised hell, me included, about an account that the company had that was breaking FCC rules regarding calling times, sending thousands of calls out and automatically connecting to our employees. This led to endless threats toward the employees, which subsequently led to everyone having mental breakdowns. When that account was finally closed, it wasn't long after that I was canned. They built the budget around that account, which I helped close. It was devastating, flaring up what I now know are severe abandonment issues. Shout out to eventually starting therapy and figuring that out. Even still, though, it helps me to immediately distrust everybody above me in power. Nobody matters to a company in late-stage capitalism. Eventually, I got fired from Wells Fargo, listened to episode 300 for more about working there, and ended up... we are now the Kevin History Podcast, and I'm perfectly fine with that. That's what dedication gets you, listener. And ended the week after at Second Harvest of the Big Bend, a food bank here in Tallahassee, where I became the family nutrition coordinator. I was scheduling mobile distributions, drive-through events, neighborhood empowerments, where neighbors, as we called them, could pick up food at what were effectively service fairs. And most importantly, me, I spearheaded our grocery locker program, which neighbors could use to pick up food 24/7 from refrigerated lockers. We were the first food bank at the Southeast to plant these on the ground and has since sprung up around the country. It's something I take a lot of pride in. When we first installed it was at elementary school, it was just a few blocks down from a mobile home park that had their rents raised 100%. Those lockers did, do, and will continue to help people. The most recently installed had a grand opening last week, fancy ribbon cutting and everything. I dressed up all night. It was neat. I felt good. Everything was great. Then 20 employees had their positions terminated less than 24 hours later, including many people who dedicated themselves every single day and were doing amazing things without many resources, including my now ex-wife. Listen, a lot's changed since episode 400, including Molly and I now being better friends than arguably ever. And so things have been tense this week. Hearing what happened to Dave and now Katie is awful. Even Patch's worry about colon cancer hits home. I worry about my health. I worry about what happens to my work now that I'm gone. But what I accomplished, like Katie, will remain. Katie, you built Vanity Fair into an outright powerhouse. The talent you cultivated, the writing skills you possess, the kindness you've shared with all you met, from the celestial movie stars in the sky to the terrestrial fans reading your work. Nobody else could accomplish what you did. You're an inspiration regardless of industry. I'm baffled, confused, and outright bamboozled as to why anyone would think it was smart to ever let your knowledge go. Dave, I didn't end up in surgery, but damn, dude, I understand the joys of diverticulitis and you're crushing it here. You're going to be back in those screening rooms at no time flat. I'm really glad you're okay. Patches, yell at your insurance until I let you get screened for colon cancer. Ehrlich, you were correct about Dune Part 2. Things are tough as hell right now. Thank you, as always, for making the world a brighter place for an hour or so each week. I'm really glad Patches and Dave didn't actually cancel the podcast. With all the parasocial love in the world, Kevin.
Wow. An epic letter from Kevin.
Oh, it really was.
A great supporter.
Also, just the satisfaction of setting up, community fridges is how I understand. I guess refrigerated locker is basically just a fridge. But just what an incredible service to do with such a direct impact on people. Like, what a great idea. And again, that's work that you do, and the impact of it can't be taken away from you, even if the work actually is. So good job, Kevin.
It is pivoting.
We got a couple more emails.
Okay,
save them for next week. We have to do other things. Yes, the save. There's so many emails.
How many weeks do we need to talk about my medical problems, Patches? We're gonna squeeze them all in here.
We have a whole agenda. Save some emails. We had a good time. That was an epic letter from Kevin. We'll do more letters next week.
Okay, we'll do more letters.
Don't worry. There's gonna be more Katie on the podcast.
Patches,
everyone loves Katie.
It's a major life event, so the people will love you too.
I know.
All right, so we're gonna save our last four emails for next
week. That's a lot of
emails.
Good for you guys. But
thank you guys for sending it in. By all means, keep sending in more emails. FITWR.podcast@gmail.com. This week we will be talking about what happened to Katie. We'll also be talking about two movies, but it seems like we're developing more of a back and forth relationship with our listeners here through email, and I'm all for it.
I'm all for it, too.
What else are we going to do?
Also, again, as we age into this podcast, we get to talk about our ailments.
What else are we going to do? Patches, you can't be like, let's fucking stop with the emails, but what else are we going to do? Pick a fucking lane.
We're the Do Everything podcast.
We're the Do Everything podcast. Let's move on with the show. It's the dream. Guys, I turned, as I have many times before in my life, to the world of film piracy, because
do you want to say this out loud?
Okay. I was wondering if we were going to acknowledge that this is how you
I don't think we
it.
Have to talk about the particular avenues you took to get there, but you're trapped at home.
Yeah,
you
I'm
had to do
home.
This.
Medically required.
I can't go out. We talked about wanting to talk about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire last week because Katie wanted to take her child, and I wanted to be part of this conversation.
I was made to take my child. I want is
she was
strong.
Absolutely
we'll get there.
Thrilled to spend time with her child.
I was.
So I wanted to do that, and I was like, you know what? I am gonna check out Ghostbusters Frozen Empire through non-legal means.
You pulled it from the ether, a ghost.
In the red box in the basement with all the ghosts in it.
Containment unit.
Mm-hmm, thank Come you. On.
Definitely. This is still part of my Sony making concessions to me for having me sit through Madam Web, so I don't feel too bad about what I did with Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. However, I also did this one for me, which is we're going to talk about Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire, which is a movie I could not go out and see, and instead went the illegal pirate route. But the difference is, after watching Godzilla the New Empire and enjoying it for being dumb, we're going to talk about that with Matt Patches, who also got a chance to see it. I bought a ticket for Godzilla X Kong the New Empire and didn't go because I can't.
You're a very
you
good person.
Yeah. That movie got my money.
Is that because you wanted to invest in the MonsterVerse? Do you feel ethically bound to the theatrical experience where you had to put your money where your mouth is? Or are you personally invested in MonsterVerse?
I saw the movie, and for about 40 solid minutes of this movie, I was like, I wish I was seeing, piracy is something that I use as a necessity. It's not the way I want to see anything. It's a
this
dude
version
holding
leaked
a camera.
From Portuguese dubbing site like, is not good enough.
I mean, and then like especially for this movie where it's like the fun parts of the movie are these giant monsters fighting. I want to see it in theaters. I made a tweet when I missed my screening because of medical reasons that was like, I'm sure this is going to be dumb. It's going to be poorly reviewed. If you can give this movie legs so that I can heal and go see it in theaters, that would be great, audience. And, you know, the audience rose up and it had the second best opening of 2024, I believe, behind Dune Part 2. Yeah.
Because at this point, it's 4 weeks later, just like you can't get, you cannot count on the movie still being there.
Well, I mean, we're getting a rush of the pre-summer movie season dumping ground here in April. So I'm like, I imagine once Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes opens, they're going to want to open on IMAX and it's going to boot the new Empire out. So I might be screwed there. We'll see. I have a wound check in a couple of days. Maybe I'll be cleared to go back to the theater. I've definitely bought my tickets for The People's Joker on April 22nd, which is the earliest possible day, they told me, unless I am some sort of miracle of healing. But we're here to talk about Adam Wingard's second movie in the MonsterVerse. It's Godzilla X Kong. I'm told the X is silent. So Godzilla Kong, the new empire.
That's such a...
This is...
It's a collab.
Which is super, Godzilla X Kong or Godzilla Kong? That is, neither of them make any sense.
Well, in the Spanish language version, as I was looking it up, thanks to Dave's ways of seeing this movie, it's Godzilla E Kong.
Oh, okay, I like that.
That's a good and.
Isn't that just and? Yeah. So yes. Isn't this show Godzilla and Kong?
Well, it is, but not in America, not in English.
The important thing here is they're not necessarily versing. Is like
they're
the last movie.
Not. Well, I guess they have a bit of a. Oh, Godzilla
yeah.
suplexes Kong.
Yes, one of my favorite parts of the movie is when Godzilla is like, I told you to stay in your hole. Get back in your fucking hole. And then they fight. But let me set this movie up a little bit and then Patches and I can talk about if it is good or not.
What matters here?
Returning characters from Godzilla, X Kong,
Godzilla.
Rebecca Hall.
Oh.
Rebecca Hall plays a scientist who's the head Kong researcher at Monarch, the place that has a legacy of monsters if you've been following this podcast. And Brian Tyree Henry is back as Bernie, the podcaster, the in-universe kaiju podcaster.
He's been now in three of these movies. Is that right? He started in King of Monsters with Millie Bobby Brown running around. And
was Rebecca Hall
like his...
not also in that one, too?
No, Rebecca Hall was just...
I think she's been
new.
In the last two. But
I
yes.
saw the
Brian
one
Tyree Henry
where
somehow
like,
spans three of these movies.
Brian Tyree Henry, Millie Bobby Brown, like run through a tunnel from America to Japan or something.
That's the last
Godzilla vs. Kong.
That's the last one?
Yeah, yes. The last one.
Okay.
The previous two, Brian Tyree Henry comes in because he's like a conspiracy theorist podcaster.
Yes, I remember that.
Like connects with Kyle Chandler, whose wife turns out to be
an eco terrorist.
Like, yeah, an eco terrorist who wants to unleash the beast upon the world. You wouldn't remember this movie because it's a piece of shit. King of Monsters sucks ass.
Yeah,
King of
Monsters is the worst one.
But why Brian did I see? Henry, I think I saw Godzilla vs. Kong for this podcast. As I think about this,
I don't think it was Dave. Correct me if I'm wrong, but like Brian Tyree Henry in this movie is basically playing like Chris Tucker in Rush Hour. He's doing like extreme comedy relief, like oh no, or like ah, I'm going down a vortex.
Yes,
and it's
I
like
mean, well,
what happened to your you had like even if I didn't like King of Monsters, I felt like he was science minded and an interesting person and like grounded in humanity, and now he's just like wigging out over going to Hollow Earth in this movie. That's fine.
Well,
he's very
he's
funny.
Going to Hollow Earth to get proof for his conspiracy theories, but he's talked out of it by Dan Stevens. We'll get there. The third returning character is Gia. She is the deaf girl of the Iwi tribe. She's the one who could do sign language with Kong.
I remember this.
She's back. The movie opens, and we are told that Godzilla is on the surface of the Earth fighting any sort of kaiju monsters that show up and try to fuck with humanity. Godzilla beats him down because he is the alpha. Kong has been given dominion over the Hollow Earth that we discovered in Godzilla vs. Kong and explored a little bit more in Monarch Legacy of Monsters. But Kong is also scouring the Hollow Earth for just a peer. He is very lonely, much like Gia is lonely on the surface world, being the last member of the Iwi tribe, which first showed up in Kong Skull Island, but they're extinct now. So we begin this movie. Kong is very lonely. He thinks he hears like the call of another great ape, but it turns out to be some fucking lizard. So he's mad. And not only that, but his tooth hurts. And so he has to come up. He has to come up from the Hollow Earth.
He has to go to the dentist, Katie.
Yeah. He has to get some dental work done by Dan Stevens, who plays a character named
Ace Ventura pet dentist.
Yes, he is a veterinarian for kaiju. That is a profession that now exists in the MonsterVerse. Meanwhile, Gia is having visions, and Godzilla has woken up and is traveling around the globe, powering up, and nobody knows why.
He also likes to take little naps in the Coliseum.
He does. That's where he naps just, now.
He curls up like a little kid.
I heard that like he takes two naps over the course of this movie.
He does. Well, yeah. Yeah.
He takes
and
a final
And then falls
nap.
Asleep at the end. So there's, you know, three total naps.
I consider
naps.
That nap. Oh.
Because there's one, he takes a nap after fucking with Tiamat. It doesn't matter. Godzilla's arc in this movie is he wakes up.
Tiamat.
He wakes up realizing he needs to power up. He powers up all the way to the finale. This is mostly a movie about Kong, who discovers in the Hollow Earth a group of chimp kaiju. They're not the great apes. They are definitely giant chimps being ruled over by the tyrannical Scar King, which I saw one review describe as 90s Gary Oldman villain, and that definitely fits.
Has the same haircut, for sure. How do they know his name is Scar King? Remind me of this.
Does he have a scar?
Because we get a lot of Rebecca Hall in this movie saying things like, it's the Scar King.
Yes. The humans exist in this movie to tell us what the kaiju are doing because the kaiju can't talk, but that's also unnecessary because as we've learned from things like Rise of the Planet of the Apes or War for the Planet of the Apes, humanity currently knows how to read CG ape faces, so I don't know why we need to know these things, but Rebecca Hall does give a lot of voiceover while looking at, I guess, some ancient murals. Much like we'll talk about later in Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
It's she the season of ancient murals.
Yeah.
Delivering exposition.
She's the Patton Oswalt of this movie telling us the names of the giant things and why they're fighting each other. This all culminates when in the Hollow Earth they find more Iwi tribe, but these ones are Mothra worshippers, and it turns out Gia has the power to awake Mothra.
Did we not do the Mothra like callback franchise callback in a previous one of these movies? Wasn't Zhang Ji in King of Monsters doing the like reference to little twins who communicate with Mothra? I felt like we did this reference before, but now we're like redoing it within the same continuity.
This is a rumor that I absolutely believe, but Mothra in this movie was another new kaiju that didn't test well, so they redid it with Mothra. Oh.
I mean, Mothra looks cool in this movie. Big moth, fights people, saves a, I was going to call it a spaceship, but it really goes only to Hollow Earth, so hover ship? It's all good, all good
inner
fun.
Inner spaceship.
Sure.
Then everybody fights for the very last 15 minutes, and that's basically the plot of the movie. This is a movie that I would never call good, but also the majority of Godzilla movies made what's called during the Showa period, but during like the 60s and the 70s, would also fall in that category of Godzilla movies I wouldn't call good. That doesn't mean that I didn't enjoy myself. There's a moment in the movie, Katie, let me tell you,
okay,
where I realized the kind of movie I was watching. Kong happens across a little baby looking Kong, and the baby looking Kong looks
a real
all sad.
Tremblay-esque Kong.
Yes.
Tremblay 20 by now. Does he need to stop being our reference point?
He still looks like he was in Room, so I think
he's 17.
Either way, a very small little monkey, and Kong's like, hey, let me help you, buddy. This little monkey immediately lures him into a trap with the other more aggressive apes, and Kong, as a way of both defending himself and probably punishing this baby Kong, uses him as a cudgel against the other apes, just picks him up, this other character and uses him to hit the other apes. And I'm like, this is exactly the level of stupid that I want this movie to be at. I recalibrated my expectations, and therefore I had a great time, even though, like, Godzilla kills thousands of people in this movie. Just, he doesn't care about where, he knows where he's going, he knows what he needs to do, but he'll, like, go through bridges. At one point, he swims from the Rock of Gibraltar to Cairo in, like, 10 minutes, which surely killed a whole bunch of things.
That's why we call him Naiad now.
Yeah. Destroys all three pyramids. Godzilla doesn't give a fuck. This movie doesn't give a fuck. It is just here to show us giant monsters fighting. Patches, I think that's the best I could do to describe the plot.
Here's my question for you. Godzilla versus Kong, would you have said it's a good movie? I did not go back and listen to our podcast. I assume we did one about that movie. But my memory of it is that I had a lot of fun. Like, I thought it was a vast improvement over King of the Monsters that I was just railing against. But Adam Wingard, who stepped up and directed that movie, I thought brought a lot of roller coaster flair to mm-hmm. it. Like, it was cool to be, which that Kong versus Godzilla takes place pretty much on the surface. And then they get to Hollow Earth for a little bit and then come back and do their big battle. I think in South Korea, there's like a lot of neon. He's really establishing this like super glow, neon, cartoon embraced vibe. But I remember talking to him for that movie, you know, it has every kind of animation reference in Godzilla versus Kong. It's like there's Macross missiles flying around as the military is going to Hollow Earth and then they're coming through. And I remember talking to Wingard about like the Back to the Future ride. That, mm-hmm. There's a scene in that movie that's just complete, and he's like, absolutely, you're getting the reference. Like, we're zipping and the camera is moving, and it feels almost like what the best of Zemeckis in mocap mode, where there's physics to everything, but the camera can go anywhere. I thought the movie was really visually thrilling and inventive. And this movie, I wouldn't call it like slop, but I do think it's just like The Lion King live action, quote live action version remake, but for Godzilla Kong. Like, we're just making a big animated movie at this point. The human element, this is what David would call post-human, except in maybe the bad way. And I mean, in Godzilla 2014, I think he called it because like the characters are being diminished in some way, or just like, truly, the scale of Godzilla, you don't need the humans. They stand in awe. They can't do anything about Godzilla. Godzilla owns the screen in that movie. In this movie, it just feels like, I mean, every line out of the human actor's mouth is like a Team America dialogue. It's so dumb. And it's just so pointless. It's an hour and 44 minutes or so. And like,
I do like that.
It felt like a 28-minute Saturday morning cartoon in both inventiveness and flourish. Like, it just is. And I don't have a lot of negative things to say about it, but it doesn't feel as inventive as Godzilla versus Kong.
I mean, I will agree with you that I don't need any of the human stuff, period. I think it's interesting to have a Iwi tribe in a Hollow Earth that not only frees Mothra, but has two little pyramids that when they touch, stop gravity from working. Like, that's interesting. I'm glad we got that. But they speak telepathically. So again, I don't need any humans talking in this movie for this movie to work.
You can't possibly do this without any dialogue.
I mean, I think you could. The other thing that I felt about this movie that initially I thought was a bad thing, but now I think is actually, part of what makes it fun is, because of the developments of Hollow Earth, because of the developments of having to keep this interesting and adding other kaiju in it, scale is gone. Everything Gareth Edwards did in 2014 is meaningless now.
It's such an interesting choice because, like, obviously Hollow Earth can be this vast fantasy land. And there are moments in the first half of the movie that kind of reminded me of the Peter Jackson King Kong, or even the very, very classic Kong, like going to Skull Island and you get to recreate a bunch of people touching
in every Kong movie ever. Yeah,
exactly. But the scale is gone because he just looks like a regular sized monkey in the vastness of the Hollow Earth. you can't tell how big anything is, and nothing has weight. They can jump anywhere. They can smash each other to the ground. They're just normal sized. And then occasionally they go to the Earth's surface and stand next to a pyramid, and you're like, oh, I guess you're big. Or like they fight in Rio de Janeiro, and they cut to, for just mere seconds, human elements running away, and you're like, oh yeah, you big.
Oh, but yeah.
Not, like, you don't feel it at all.
Thousands of people just died.
Is this like the Ant-Man Quantumania problem of like you're like bopping around in kind of fake space? Like it just gives you nothing to hold on
Where's the micro in that movie? Yeah, I think that's a great comparison.
I think so. The thing that you gain in this film by discarding scale is you also get to discard physics. And that allows for things like the powering up of Godzilla, the suplexing of Kong, the float battle.
I would argue those moments have physics, and they're rare. Like, what was annoying me is when they could jump off any building and, like, go super far. They lacked... And there are moments of this. I wrote down, there's an evil, frost-spewing dragon kaiju now. Mm-hmm. There's, like, another Godzilla that the evil Kong has as a partner, and they do a splash page moment where the two Kongs are, like, about to punch each other, and the two Godzilla-ish lizards are coming at each other. Whenever they cut to the close-up of this frost-spewing kaiju, it does have this, like, quality where it's moving its head around almost on like a rig. It looks like it does have weight, and it feels like a puppet. And I was starting to realize, like, oh, that's what this movie is kind of like a 1980s. It has a lot of like 80s vibes more than Godzilla versus Kong. Like I was thinking about,
it does have a lot of Kiss. It does have a lot of Pink.
Yeah. And it feels like those 80s fantasy movies that tried to be big, but they could only go as far as like puppets and matte paintings could take them. And I wanted like more shagginess in that way. Like there's moments with that frost kaiju where it feels like a puppet moving around and it feels a little stiff in like a good way. And there's close-ups of Godzilla that do this too. I just wish they capture that. Wingard captures that in the close-ups, but not in the big battles, which I guess you would skimp on the spectacle if you went full bore into man in suit pretending. But I could have used maybe a little of that. I thought the fights were not very inventive. I thought like I just wasn't getting really like cool angles and cool moves.
I mean, I like the fights, but I hear what you're saying. This is something like the movie Godzilla versus Monster Zero, where some aliens loan out Godzilla from Earth and take him to another planet to fight Monster Zero. It ends up being Ghidorah. But that's the movie where it's like the gif of Godzilla doing the little jig. That comes from Godzilla versus Monster Zero.
And what era is that?
That's the Showa era.
That's Showa, right? Okay, because I wanted to get a little nerdy here and be like, is this truly Showa? This felt like Millennium to me, where it's just like a lot of like color and excess and promises and not a lot of like oddities
The thing that feels the most Millennium about this to me is the idea that there is a continuity when these movies don't have to have a continuity. I don't give a fuck about Monarch. I'll watch a Monarch show, but right. Like, I don't give a fuck about whatever Monarch's doing here. They're doing a horrible job. Tens of thousands of people are dying, and they're like, we have to help Kong, and we have to help Godzilla. And I'm like, who are you serving, you fucking sub-government? Or nobody elected you. What's happening? Why has Dan Stevens been giving a budget to make a Kong mecha glove that makes Kong more deadly? I don't understand what the point... Anyway.
I gotta say, there's a shot where Kong is coming out with his new power glove, and he grabs the... he's coming out of Egypt, I think, and his metal hand comes and grabs the pyramid, and I'm just like, this is Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. And when I said that to myself, I stuck my head in the toilet. Why am I thinking about that movie? Why am I thinking about Transformers at any given time? Why is this movie making me think that way?
This one doesn't respect any of its human stars, like when John Turturro had to be under the testicles of the destroying Transformers.
There should have been a shot of Dan Stevens under an ape with its testicles hanging down, yelling into a walkie-talkie. There are the monkey balls!
So here is the thing. This movie reportedly cost $135 million That is less than King of the Monsters, $170 million. That is less than Kong Skull Island's, $185 million. That is less than Joker Folie à Deux's, $200 wow. million. Dollars.
What? $200 million Joker? For the Joker that, sequel?
That is what it is being reported as. So here's the thing. I'm what? Fine with this. If Adam Wingard wants to continue his Godzilla X Kong trilogy with one more movie, this is fine. This is a no harm, no foul, stupid movie for me. Sure. I got exactly what I wanted for my ticket price, even though I stole it. I was happy to pay that ticket price back to the movie. Because yes, this is like, fine. Especially when we have Godzilla Minus One proving, just like, you know, previous Toho Godzilla movies, Toho's doing serious Godzilla.
Yes, there's still room exists. For all.
Yeah, Monster Versus do this. Put $185 million into the second season of, you know, Monarch Legacy of Monsters and do some more dumb fighting on that show. Like, absolutely. So,
and get my beloved Rebecca Hall her paycheck so she can make another movie like Passing, yes. Just a fabulous film. She can show up and spew bullshit and look at portals and be like, whoa, portals.
Yeah,
she does it so many times in this movie. I'm like, I hope you get it. I hope you are at least having some fun. I think she is.
If Rebecca Hall did more than 10 days on this movie, she didn't need to. Like,
she has
just
a great haircut.
Give her $1 million a day and let her do her thing. It's fine. Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, go see it in theaters so it has legs so I could go see it in theaters. Thank you very much.
Monkey legs.
As time ticks by, still I try. No rest for God, stops in my mind. On my own, here we go.
Katie Rich.
What's up?
You are not working at Vanity Fair anymore.
I'm not. It
As
feels
our letter segment.
Weird to, yeah, you kind of learned that from the letter segment or from social media. I guess last week's episode, I made it clear that I didn't have anything else to promote. I don't know. Like, I'm curious about what you guys want to know or think other people want to know. Obviously, like, there's not... I mean, I don't want to, like, put anybody on blast. I have nothing negative to say truly about anyone at Vanity Fair,
what do you think
Fair,
of the media
actually.
Industry? Someone who came up to me over the weekend industry. Was like, what's it like working in the media right now?
Oh, boy.
And I'm like, why are you asking me this? I'm trying to have a night out.
I mean, the thing is, like, working in media is great until it's not, right? Like, this is the first time I've ever been laid off. Like, I think everyone else on this podcast has been laid off at some point. Like, we've all kind of shuffled around. Not Dave.
Not me.
I know Patches
Dave
has, and I know
get fired
David
from
has.
Things.
Like
Teen Mom forever.
That kind of shuffle is like a rite of passage, and I got really lucky that I had a great job at Vanity Fair that I really liked and worked with people who kind of looked out for me, allowed me to move to North Carolina 7 years ago and do the job remotely, which is really crazy. And kind of had layoffs in the time that I was there, but I kind of, you know, filled in different jobs. Like, my job changed a lot of times over the course that I was there, which kind of kept me really interested in it. And then, you know, my luck ran out in some ways. Like, I don't feel personal about it. I mean, the weird thing that I don't know if it was as clear from what I tweeted, but, like, you guys know, like, they put this layoff list together in November. So, like, it's been 4 months of knowing, no, five, almost 5 months. Of knowing this was coming, and like I was able to do my job as normal for a long time and kind of feel like maybe I'd be able to keep it. And then the move to the central team happened and kind of made that impossible. So it's been such a surreal layoff. Like, many people I know have been laid off, but no one has been like gone through it in exactly this way, which has been bizarre and kind
of
fun.
Because they still shuffled you, like Condé still pays you.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so I'm still on the Condé Nast payroll. I've been moved to a central unit along with the other people from editorial departments who were on the list to do other work, which, you know, whatever. I don't need to talk too much about it. It's not really that relevant and doesn't really reflect my
work at
VFL.
Are you going to be a prompt engineer for some sort of AI?
I don't know yet. And we'll
Katie's
going
to be writing the answers to that blue fairy machine from AI.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just be under the
Can
under
I
the
be a real
Ocean
boy?
For
and
a
you
while.
Tell Haley Joel Osment.
Yeah, I mean, it's a it's a step in like a long process. Like I've learned a lot about like laborers and labor unions and like bargaining contracts. Like the kind of union is still bargaining its first ever contract, which is why.
Remember when I started a union at Realist and you guys are like, that's crazy.
I know. No, you were incredibly ahead of the curve on, I mean, media unions have become increasingly popular.
Definitely.
And like, I think have hit a lot of the kind of headaches that the Condé Union has, where like they've been bargaining a contract for a year and haven't gotten to an agreement. They've gotten agreements on a lot of stuff. Like I'm watching them in these, you know, bargaining sessions, like they're getting a lot of language changed in the contract that never would have happened without a union. And, you know, the 90 people who have been on this layoff list are still not laid off and are still having their jobs. And at the end of this, they may well keep their jobs. We don't know how this is going to turn out, but I'm really grateful and fascinated by what I've learned from the union in the process. But you know, bummed that it happened in the first place. Like I, as I said on Twitter, like I would have kept that job forever. It's funny to me that the last time I lost a job or left a job, this podcast had to change its name. So here we are again to reflect
we
on everything
prevail.
That's happened in the past 10 years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also thank you, Katie, for, you know, you, brought me and Joanna along with you over to Vanity Fair.
Yeah, we did so much fun stuff together.
We had some great runs, some great times.
Yeah, Patches,
and,
I don't think you ever...
Didn't bring me?
Did you ever do anything with me at VF? I feel like you've been...
What do you mean, have I ever done anything with you at VF?
Did we work together and I forgot?
Well, I've written for Vanity Fair multiple times, and I appeared on the Little Gold Men podcast. Once, when invited. I never get invited on anyone's podcast. I don't know why. I'm hilarious.
What did you write for Vanity Fair?
What did I write for Vanity Fair?
I'm looking at it right. Oh, wow. You wrote a history of Too Many Cooks in 2014. Wow, you were doing a lot in like that first year that I was there. You must have been. Oh, yeah. You covered Sundance
for
us.
So forgettable.
This was 10 years. 10 years ago.
It was 10 years ago.
Too Many Cooks was 10 years ago?
Yeah, you reviewed The Guest, speaking of Dan Stevens.
Hey,
Chris
an Adam Woodward film.
Oh, you reviewed Boyhood.
Camp X-Ray?
Yeah, Camp X-Ray.
Oh, wow, I called that.
You reviewed Nymphomaniac and Whiplash.
Wow,
I think you
great year for Sundance.
It looks like you interviewed Alexandre Desplat. Yeah, you did.
Sure, let's
see,
go.
See, you don't remember this either.
You don't remember these hits?
Yeah, you were...
legendary work.
11 Things We Learned About Interstellar.
Okay.
Did you go to like a preview, like a trailer debut or something?
Good question. Well, my storied career at Vanity Fair was not as long as yours.
Yes.
What changed in 10 years, Katie?
Oh, God, everything.
What's changed in Hollywood? Covering
what has changed in Hollywood in the past 10 years?
In your Vanity
years?
Fair run.
I mean, the Oscars changed a ton. Like, it's really fascinating.
Do you think so?
Yeah. I mean, the Oscar So White happened entirely since I started at Vanity Fair. I think that was in 2014 and 2015. And the voting body of the Academy has changed dramatically since then, which is why you get winners like Parasite and Everything Everywhere All at Once. Like, it's the way the whole process behind that has changed a ton.
What about the awards season?
Yeah, I mean, the wine scenes
are
gone. The politicking is nicer. Social media is still a big part of it, but it's used in kind of less blunt ways, I think. A24 is a big factor in it in terms of like, they're just cool and people like care about the brand of the company that's distributing these movies, which is a wild thing to think about. And there's, you know, there's more and more money in it. The streamers change the logic of award season entirely, where Netflix kind of swoops in and spends an incredible amount of money to promote Roma as a best picture winner. And it's probably going to change again. Like, it seems like they're scaling back on stuff like that. So we don't really know what's going to happen with it. This is the thing. Award season is fascinating. And I've spent a lot of time talking about on Little Gold Men. You guys let me talk about it here sometimes. But I hope I keep getting to do it. You know, as I made it clear last week, like, I don't know what the future holds yet. I'm having some interesting conversations with a lot of people. Any listeners are welcome to be among them. But it does seem like people still want to hear me talk about the Oscars somewhere. So I hope I still get to. And if not,
you have a home
I'm
here.
Still here. I can make you guys
that's right.
Listen as long as I make you to.
What if anything, can listeners do to support you in this time?
Oh.
I know, like...
I'm actually taking donations.
What is it? Is it Sean King, the guy who's like, I am in touch with the victims. I will accept.
I am personally getting money for Katie via my Venmo.
My Twitter presence could be a Hire Katie Rich fan page. But how could listeners support you? Do you just want, your fans to speak up? Should they fitwr.podcast@gmail.com?
They're welcome to. I have gotten so many really nice emails and tweets from so many people. So honestly, the overwhelming gratitude of all of that is really crazy. It's like going to your own funeral. Like people just say those emails you read at the beginning of the show, like people saying incredibly nice things that there's a part of your brain that's like, well, that's all very nice, but the real me wouldn't do any of this. And then eventually it kind of starts to sink in, like, no, some of these things are allowed to be true. No, people have been so supportive already. Like, I hope, people continue to listen to me or read me wherever else I land. I don't think there's a campaign to be waged on my behalf or anything, but if there is, this will probably be this is my platform.
It'll be at subscribe to Fighting in the War Room.
Yeah, leave us a review. Rate us on iTunes.
And I love that you said,
renew Katie. Gosh.
I love that you said attending your own funeral, because that means here for this music break, enjoy Rush's Tom Sawyer.
Wow. I should reread Tom Sawyer.
A Monday warrior, mean stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean pride.
Wildly enough, on the day, last Thursday was when my last Little Gold Men published, and I, put out a series of tweets about what was going on and kind of started seeing some of the messages, and then left everything behind to go see Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
To see a future Oscar nominee.
It was honestly great. Like it was, like I was saying, it was kind of overwhelming the amount of messages I was getting. So I was like, I'm done. I just hear my phone buzzing as Charlie and I went and saw Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Because it was his spring break, and he wanted to
now,
see it.
Now, did your child want to see this movie?
He had seen the preview for it before Kung Fu Panda, I guess.
Wow, really? That seems like a kind of hard-edged preview.
Well, the trailers before this were bananas. Like, we walked into the theater as a Challengers trailer was playing, and I was like, I don't want this. Like, I don't consider myself a prude, but I do not need to have this conversation with my 7-year-old. And
what would be the conversation?
Why are those that's a good question.
Can three people be a couple?
I guess that's what it is. It's just why are these people all kissing each other? But he's 7. He's
because they love each other.
Like kissing just doesn't register on his brain at all. Like he just couldn't care less. So it didn't matter.
You could have told him it only happens with tennis players, so he doesn't need to worry about it.
I was also thinking about the leg break that's in the trailer that is so gross and freaks people out. But I think the version we saw kind of went easy on it. But there was also a trailer for Tarot, the horror movie.
Oh, sure. Wow. That's,
I know.
Has to be rated R.
That seemed, it might be PG-13. I don't know. It just seemed very intense for Ghostbusters.
Oh, good. Charlie shouldn't be pulling tarot cards. And
yeah, exactly. No, he needs to learn to have threesomes with tennis players and not pull tarot cards. There aren't that many live action movies that kids can see these days, Wonka being kind of a huge exception that might kick off a trend there. And I just knew that the gadgets of Ghostbusters and the ghost effects, and he kind of he's interested in New York and interested in an adventure stuff. It just seemed like it was.
But yeah, I wasn't sure if Ghostbusters has a place in obviously when we were growing up, Ghostbusters was huge.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know if I had seen the movies, but I was obsessed with the real Ghostbusters cartoon. Mm-hmm. I had the car, I had the characters, I had the action figures. Like, I was super into Ghostbusters. And it has always, no matter how much the internet crows about toxic Ghostbusters fandom and coming after the 2016 Kristen Wiig, Melissa McCarthy movie, there's a lot of toxicity around Ghostbusters fandom. It always makes sense to me that there's people out there who want something more from this, who think it can be the movies could be the cartoon, because that's so pivotal. I enjoy the original two movies on some level, especially the first one. But I get why people think the scope could open up, that could feel blockbustery, that it could feel cartoony in a good way. I have no idea if kids today unlike Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which has iterated over and over and over again as different kinds of cartoons, Ghostbusters has not done that. Although I think they dreamt of doing that. Didn't they start before Ivan Reitman died?
Yeah.
Didn't they start a group where they were going to try and do another cartoon
Ghost
and
Core.
An expanded?
They're a producer of this movie. Yep. Ghost Core is one of the production companies on this movie.
So this is still a thing. Maybe there will be another.
There might be.
Katie, I do want to get to Frozen Empire, but in terms of springboarding off of what Patch has said, did you attempt to or ask him if you wanted to see any of the previous Ghostbusters, especially Afterlife, which led into this one?
I asked him this because I was basically the gist is there's a new one that's with kids, and then there had been an old one when I was a kid, and they're all going to be in this one. Do you want to catch up on the new one with kids? And he's like, no, I think I'm good, because so he is familiar with the concept of Ghostbusters, from other kids, I guess, who have all seen Afterlife. Mm. And when you think about it, it's they bust ghosts. And that's kind of it. You don't really need a lot of lore. And I think that was part of the appeal, too. It's they're these guys and they have these things. And they catch ghosts. And
ghosts can suck your dick.
And
movie establishes.
That's the first time I learned about it.
So we started after we saw the new one. We came home and watched part of the first one and did not get very far. It didn't seem like he disliked it, but seems to show no interest in picking it back up.
Grown-ups, it's a comedy.
It's not really a great kid. I mean, you open with that scene of
movie.
Bill Murray with the girl and the the mind reading thing, and it's
the
A,
treatment.
Gross, and B,
hilarious.
No kid really, but a kid is not meant to clock into that.
No.
Really, especially a modern kid. Who,
this is for fans of Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. So it makes sense that it's not a kid's movie. And Afterlife is certainly, whatever this one was called, Frozen Empire.
Frozen Empire.
Is much more, it's PG-13, but very tame. I didn't, other than Paul Rudd saying asshole a couple times, there's just really nothing that would flag
sure
anybody.
Suck his dick.
And I was glad, again, to have a live action movie so that Charlie knows who Paul Rudd is or knows who Bill Murray is. I don't know. There's here, welcome to the stream of culture that Kung Fu Panda 4 is not part
finally,
of.
Finally, we can introduce you to Paul Rudd.
He's never seen a Marvel movie. I keep
what
wondering
will Charlie's
if those are
second
coming
Paul Rudd movie be? Yeah, probably Ant.
Probably some kind of Marvel movie. I don't even know what other...
What's the number two Paul Rudd movie to show your kid who likes Paul Rudd now because they've seen Ghostbusters?
I don't know if he likes Paul Rudd now. I'm not sure. I mean, we talked about the ghosts. He likes Slimer, obviously.
Nice.
I mean, Slimer coming back in this one, really brought me joy. He's an important part of my childhood.
Slimer is the most consistent Ghostbuster to appear in all of the Ghostbusters movies.
Really? He's been in all of them?
He's even in Answer the Call. Yes, Slimer and Lady Slimer.
Is Ghostbusters the C-3PO of
is Slimer the three C-3PO of Ghostbusters? Yes. Essentially. Did he like it?
Yeah, he did like it. He liked the ghost and the adventure part of it, and didn't really care about the old ghost, but there's just not that much Ghostbusters lore, so that when the older ones come in there, I think it's very easy to be okay, there's more of them, and now they're all here with ghosts going
on. This movie especially is there's more of them. Was surprised how many fucking Ghostbusters
were
insane. In this
scene. You get to the end of this movie and you're what? There's one scene before the big finale where it's Kumail, the teenage kid who's not the girl, the other one, Ernie Hudson, and Annie Potts, maybe. And you're okay, so we got full B team, this entire scene, or podcast, that kid's in there too. And it's these are all of the tertiary characters, and there's five of them who are doing nothing in this movie. The part that truly got him was a Slimer part. There's a big punchline at the end of Slimer and the ghost who can jump around into different forms. It's a funny joke. It works. There's little gags like that, and kind of the novelty of the effects and the ice and the proton packs and the drone for the Ghostbusters mobile. I don't know. I don't think it's an especially good movie. I didn't have a terrible time. And it totally worked for a 7-year-old who likes gadgets and effects.
Mm.
Would it have worked on your 7-year-old self, Dave?
Would it have worked on my 7-year-old self? Yes. But because I was also the one who Ghostbusters Frozen Empire being out when I thought I wasn't going to get to see it pre-piracy, I was what I can do is watch all the other Ghostbusters. Uh-huh. So I went from all the Ghostbusters. You could digitally purchase the first season of the real Ghostbusters. So I went back and had much more vivid memories than I thought I would.
Those are all on YouTube, that first season, by the way, for free and legal.
There you go.
We should watch these.
But like, especially there's one called like Mrs. Rogers' Neighborhood, where it's like a little old lady who's possessed by like a demon that is pretty horrifically drawn. Or they have the Slimer origin story about why Slimer hangs out in the firehouse that connects directly to the first movie in the animated series, The Real Ghostbusters. And I was just like, me as a child probably would have liked Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, because what I like about Ghostbusters 1, Ghostbusters 2, and Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is they are new ghost threats. So not only do you have the Ghostbusters kind of just like doing business, but you learn about the lore of a new threat. And The Real Ghostbusters did that too, because every episode it had to have like a new ghost. And so there's always like a new, you know, king ghost who's trying to, you know, usually open the containment unit so they could rule over all the other ghosts. And that's a compelling thing. And they did that here in Frozen Empire. As an adult, there are certain things a Ghostbusters movie, I think, should do that both Afterlife and Frozen Empire don't do, which is like they should be arrested by the fucking cops. Frozen Empire has, you know, William Atherton come back and basically yell at them about child labor laws, which is close, but they don't get arrested by the cops for trying to like do this job. And then Afterlife and Frozen Empire, neither of them was New York enough for me, and I think that was sort of key to some of the Ghostbusters that I really liked. And then ultimately the reason I don't think Frozen Empire worked for me now as an adult is it is not trying hard enough to be a comedy. You have entire scenes that are about ghosts, that are about what's her face sort of having a bisexual awakening with the chess ghost, and it's like they're not trying to be a comedy the way that in Ghostbusters 1 and in Ghostbusters 2, every scene that like Bill Murray is in, he is actively working against the plot device to try to make it a comedy. And it's like that sort of tension that sort of makes it work, I think, for adults and for kids. I think Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is a perfectly fine movie for kids, but for me, I'm like, there's too many fucking Ghostbusters.
Way too many Ghostbusters.
I don't understand this story world. I don't think it's like, I get that the new big bad is, you know, pretty bad, but like all he does is wake up and walk to the firehouse. It's like, why are we not? Why are we not? You know, like we have a Central Park building in the first Ghostbusters that was built by like a cultist. We have a whole art museum that's covered with goo in the second Ghostbusters that, like, the second Ghostbusters I now think is the best Ghostbusters movie.
Wow.
Because in that one, New York has an arc. Everything has a fucking arc in that movie. Where it's like, New York, it's like, they're so shitty to everyone. Everybody is so shitty to each other that it's like, this slime is just spreading the shittiness in the ghosts. And, like, we need the Statue of Liberty to come and get all of New York together, or we won't be able to beat the fucking painting. So Ghostbusters Frozen Empire has a lot of the pieces I think that appeal to children, didn't appeal to me as an adult.
No.
But that doesn't mean I hate it. I'm not mad like I was at Roadhouse. I just think I think it has too many Ghostbusters.
I didn't show my children Roadhouse, just in case you're wondering. No, there's the whole thing in the trailer that they show over and over again of like the city freezing over that is just like could not be less relevant to what actually happens in the movie. Like, it's an interesting effect that doesn't matter at all. It doesn't feel New York-y. I don't think most of it was filmed in New York, right? Like, it feels very Atlanta-y. Like, I guess they were outside the New York Public Library. I mean, certainly parts of it. Like, I think they're outside the actual exterior of the firehouse. They're outside the public library, but, you know, there's a whole chase scene in the beginning of the movie that I don't think anybody was ever actually on the streets of New York to film.
Makes sense.
The crazy thing about this chess ghost, and like this is me not being very up to date on my Ghostbusters lore because it's a stupid thing to be up to date on, is this the first time they have established the idea of there being like a nice ghost who like you don't want to just trap in a Cage in the basement of the firehouse for eternity.
We seem to like Slimer.
Yeah, he doesn't, none of the rules apply to him. He just gets to escape whenever he wants.
Yeah, basically. But yeah, I think this is the first time of, this is definitely the first time in a Ghostbusters movie.
The director, Gil Keenan, who I'm a big fan of, actually. He did Monster House. He did that movie City of Ember.
Oh, yeah.
Bill Murray and Saoirse Ronan. I think he's just like been served a bad hand, like harder projects. And he's always on like the tail end of trends, unfortunately, for this guy. And then he, for some reason, decided to work with Jason Reitman. God bless you, sir. But he said that this was like the one thing they really wanted to do in the movie, like make a ghost. And he on Polygon was just like, I believe in ghosts. I'm compassionate to ghosts. I want to know.
Yes, he's like the Dan Aykroyd of this new
version. He really seems to be the Dan Aykroyd here, and like the guy to possess that spirit, if you will, and wanted to see like a normal person ghost in one of these movies. And I was, I've been excited to see, I guess, see how that plays. It just, to your point, Dave, doesn't seem very fun. Or it it's funny.
No, definitely not very funny.
I get why it's there, and it is nice to have, you know, the McKenna character. What's her name? I can't even
remember.
Phoebe Spangler character.
Spangler.
She gets benched. She finds solace in talking with a ghost. There's some like sort of budding discovering, you know, bisexuality maybe, or full-on homosexuality.
Yeah, so has she had a male love interest before?
No, I don't. I'm not sure, but I also don't want to label a teenage girl as one thing or another.
Sure, but there's definitely a flirtatious vibe between her and this other girl.
And the thing I kind of don't like about it is that they feel like it needs to be part of the plot, and it doesn't. So the ghost Melody, played by Emily Allen Lind, she betrays her for no reason, really, because the plot makes her do it. And it's like her character purpose was fine. We didn't need, like, this is essentially the a light blowjob ghost, but we have a backstory for her. Like, she doesn't need to be part of the overarching plot, I don't think. I would have been fine if it was just like, yeah, when Phoebe Spangler's benched, she finds solace in learning about ghosts, and she's the emotionally connected one. She was the one that connected with the ghoulish Harold Ramis CGI in the previous one. So we've at least set that up.
She's the one who looks the most like Spangler of the Spangler family.
Yeah, I like that part as part of the Ghostbusters, but I don't think it needs to be tied into the big bad. Like, I would have enjoyed it if, you know, like, the Melody ghost was just as shocked as what was going on as everybody else. Instead, they make her sort of like this mole, which is just weird because you're doing too much. Like, you're not only are you like, this is a ghost that you can communicate with that you're going to feel sad about, that you have to like help move on, but she has to flip flop several times and be central to the plot, which is something that makes this movie feel overstuffed because it adds like five new characters and it thinks they all need to be central to the main plot.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you could have six different plots in a movie. It's fine. Before like tying it all together. So like, there's a lot of cool ideas in this movie. James Acaster is in this movie as like a ghost researcher. And like that whole idea that Ernie Hudson's character has put together, Winston has put together like this ghost research study thing is another cool idea. But it's like they're all stuffed in with this idea with Kumail Nanjiani's character and his like backstory of firebending and everything. This movie's so overstuffed that Patches, you were talking about Godzilla X Kong sort of feeling like a Saturday morning cartoon. This feels like X-Men 97, where it's like six half-hour...
Wait, X-Men 97 is awesome.
I mean, yeah, but it feels like six half-hour plots that have been strung together, but like each one sort of could have been its own thing, and I would have enjoyed it more than how it kind of has to smash together at the end, including Bill Murray, the least excited to be in this movie that I've ever seen Bill Murray ever be in. Literally shows up at the end, is like, I thought you could use some help, and it's like, I don't... I don't understand.
I spent some time looking at him and being in the group shots and being like, was Bill Murray ever in the same place as Carrie Coon? And then there's like one shot where it kind of seems like they actually are in the same place, but it does. He feels so siloed from everything else.
Carrie Coon also feels siloed.
I mean,
in Wolfheart, his arc is he wants to drive Ecto-1. He gets to drive Ecto-1.
Yeah.
I like,
you can tell, like, I never saw Afterlife, so like, I didn't know what was going on, but like Finn Wolfhard and a podcast, and then that girl who's working at the research lab. You're like, oh, they were in the first movie and they don't have anything to do now, so they just need to be in it to make people happy, and that's it. It's really strange. Like, the only character arc at all, I think, belongs to, I guess, Phoebe and then Paul Rudd, like, kind of becoming the, like, surrogate dad, and that's it.
Yeah, everybody else is, I mean, Kumail Nanjiani has a character arc as well.
He gets to become the fire master.
Yeah, the fire master. Everybody else is just kind of there.
I mean, it's a, like, he's not given like jokes in the traditional sense, but I feel like he kind of gets the vibe of the whole thing at least.
Yeah, and I get why he's there, because it's like, you know, fire versus ice or whatever, but this movie's trying to do like 17 things at once. So I actually, this might actually be the pivot movie that we were talking about Ghost Core wanted to make. Like, this is like, hey, 7 to 12 year olds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Ghostbusters is yours now.
Yeah,
we tried giving it to adult women. Everybody yelled at us.
People got so mad.
Now it's for the preteens. And you know, maybe that's what Ghostbusters always should have been. Definitely where it's found the most financial success.
I like the 2016 movie. I'll still go to bat.
Oh sure.
I think the director's funny movie. The director's cut is really good. The theatrical cut, kind of boring. But yeah, I think there's a lot of good things in that movie.
I would like to see that one again. It's funny to me that people got so mad about Girl Ghostbusters in 2016, and now there's like possibly gay Girl Ghostbuster. Everyone's like, fine.
But this movie's bombing.
Is it?
I think it's over. I think Ghostbusters is over, sadly. Maybe not sadly.
It's not competing with Godzilla vs. Kong or even Kung Fu Panda 4, really. But let me look up.
It's made 109 worldwide already.
It's not
huge, but like, it's got, we got places to go. I don't know. But Godzilla vs. Kong is so big, and like, I think plenty of 7-year-old boys are probably also seeing that one. I need to gauge interest on whether or not we need to go see that one too.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't have a horrible drop off from week one to week two.
65%?
That's pretty bad.
I mean, that's pretty bad, but it's not like 70%.
Not disastrous.
80%.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, maybe don't get your hopes up for the trilogy capper.
Sure.
On this one.
I don't think it needs to have a trilogy capper. Paul Rudd's the dad now.
Yeah,
we did
there's
it.
There's no lingering threads to pick up, really.
Yeah. I mean, if there were another Ghostbusters, fine, but again, it doesn't need to go anywhere. I mean, it could go back into an animated series with these characters, and I would support that.
That make perfect sense.
Yeah, so whatever Ghost Core is thinking about,
give podcast a spin-off. Give podcast a podcast.
Kung Fu Panda 4 has made $151 million. It is huge.
Kung Fu Panda 4 is going pretty
well. Are we prepared
for
Despicable Me 4 to be the biggest movie?
Man, that trailer also played before Ghostbusters. Time. It's
your kids like the Minions, Katie?
No, I mean, they have encountered them plenty of times and have like watched some of their stuff, but it's never like taken hold. My kids still don't like really much of anything except Zelda, so that's still where we're at.
Well, they got a few years until that.
They got a few years, and you know what, Katie? I think Charlie might like
you're raising
Ghostbusters
great
too.
Boys.
I think, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, should we? But we can't skip Ghostbusters 1.
Sure,
yeah,
you can.
Oh, wow.
You already hear.
Here's what you need to know. They're Ghostbusters.
They bust ghosts.
And ghosts happen.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, he's already seen the movie that
the first
is
one's
like
the filthier comedy. The second one is definitely inching toward Frozen Empire territory of just being like a big spectacle adventure. And it's New York-y. You could be like, we used to live there.
Yeah. You know what the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man makes very brief appearances in Frozen Empire as tiny marshmallow men. He really liked those. So I think more Stay Puft is what's going to keep
going.
Well,
I mean, he'll, That might happen. But like the second one begins and the Ghostbusters are at a children's party and young Jason Reitman tells them they suck. And like that, I feel like that's a great way to start a movie for children.
Yeah.
And it's just like a baby's in jeopardy and there's pink slime. I feel like
it's true.
Maybe Ghostbusters 2 might hit a little bit harder than Ghostbusters 1. But there is a joke that Egon has slept with the slime, so there is still ghost fucking in Ghostbusters 2.
I still think
it's just they don't show.
We have a limited window for all that stuff going like unremarked upon and over his head, so we might take advantage of that.
Yeah, and it's definitely followed up immediately by a toaster that dances to Higher and Higher. So really, I think Ghostbusters 2 is the next step.
All right.
If he wants all right. a Ghostbusters step.
Yep, I'm going to report back. We're going to see how this goes.
Hell yeah. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Also still in theaters, but you don't need to go see it to keep it in theaters for me. I'm not going to go see it.
He did pull out Fantastic Mr. Fox after reading the book, which was highly enjoyable. Great movie.
Yes. Book first into good movie. You got to love that pipeline.
Yeah, he's going through the Roald Dahl box set, and I'm like, oh, wait, which ones are the racist ones in there? What do we have to brace ourselves for? But I think most of the bad Roald Dahl stuff is stuff he said and didn't put in the books.
Yeah, I think you're okay.
So yeah. We'll see how we do. Okay, let's wrap this show
Depends up. How you feel about fat people.
Yeah, I mean, Harry Potter, also not very nice to fat people, it turns out. So there's already a lot of that going on. That does it for this week's show. We'll be back next week. Hopefully David will be back with us. We're going to talk about a couple things, including Girl State, which is coming to Apple TV+. It's also going to be at the Full Frame Film Festival here in Durham, North Carolina. I'll talk about that more in a minute. I guess we're going to talk about Monkey Man, too. So everyone join us for those conversations next week. In the meantime, tell the people who you are.
I am Matt Patches, the executive editor of Polygon. I am on Blue Sky and Letterboxd at Mr. Patches. We have a website. FightingInTheWarRoom.com, as alluded to. We did talk about past Godzilla movies, Kong movies. You know what? I don't think any of us saw Afterlife at the time, and we do not have a podcast on that.
Really?
So don't go back.
I would have thought you guys saw it, and I was Afterlife the one who said it out.
If Harold Ramis goes, if CGI Harold Ramis is in this movie, I'm not seeing it. And someone's like, yeah.
I feel like
so
we
it
made
took, a took me like a year to see
choice
it.
To ignore that. But go back and listen to our Godzilla and Kong. Those are great.
I feel like the 2014 Godzilla would be a real landmark one.
Godzilla 2014 might be on the Fighting in the War Room.
The canon.
Canon.
Yeah.
Letterboxd list. Candidate for sure.
The post-human.
Yeah.
Post-human, yeah.
Oh, right. There's no David Ehrlich. So I'm David Gonzalez. You spell my name D-A-7-E, which is my handle on Twitter, Blue Sky, and Letterboxd, where I'm currently reckoning with my star system because I'm doing Steven Spielberg movies, but also enjoying Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. And I can't be like E.T.'s a 5-star movie and Godzilla X Kong's a 4-star movie. So I'm going to probably give Godzilla X Kong like 1.5 stars. But know that I enjoy watching bad movies. Go check me out on Letterboxd. You can also leave a review for this on the Apple Podcast app. 5 stars. Say anything. We love you. But, you know, we will probably read your review anyway. You can email us at fitwr.podcast@gmail.com. Been loving that. We learned about rectal bleeding this episode, just to remind you. But yeah, and you can also listen to me on the Trial by Content podcast, where we're trying to do try to determine the best Steven Spielberg movie. So what a world where I watch Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire, and Schindler's List on the same day. Mm-hmm. But it happened.
No wonder it happened. Did not like one of them.
I'm
Katie Rich. I'm here and I'm on Twitter and Blue Sky at Katie Rich, on Instagram at Katie Rich Talking. And on Letterboxd, where I too feel the struggle on the star rating system, but I've just kind of accepted, you know, that like something can be Mitchell's versus the Machines and also Schindler's List can be 5 stars. And that is just the multitudes that I contain. and yeah, I'll be at the Full Frame Film Festival here in Durham later this week. If anybody listening is going to be there, get in touch. And any of those places I mentioned above, it would be fun to say hello. There's going to be some good movies there, including Girl State. So I'll be ready to talk about that next week. You can find us on Twitter at FITWR, where you can tell us your favorite character from Boy State, the previous film in the series, or you can answer this week's lightning round question, which was...
In honor of Monkey Man, out this weekend, what is your favorite revenge movie?
Thank you for listening. We'll be back talking to you next week.
De Alto Cedro voy para Mayarí.